Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
My name is Kerry Ellis, and you're listening to 11, the official theatre podcast.
Hello, and welcome to 11, the official theatre podcast that brings the biggest stars and creatives together in one place to discuss life in the arts. She's the first lady of the West End that's even spent some time serving it up on Broadway, which is exactly what she's currently doing in her latest thrilling project. Now playing inside the gorgeous walls of the Barbican, she's stepping, or should that be tapping, her way into playing the delightful and iconic role of Reno Sweeney in Anything Goes. She's also known for her role as the Green Witch Elphaba in the West End and Broadway productions of Wicked, being the first British person to ever play the role, as well as leading moments in the Queen musical We Will Rock You, My Fair Lady, Wonderland, Oliver, Cats, Chess, Les Mis, Miss Saigon, and many, many more. She's also a chart-topping recording artist and has even sung for the Queen. So here, in an exclusive conversation direct from backstage between shows at the Barbican, we discuss taking the reins as Reno Sweeney in Kathleen Marshall's Olivier and Tony award-winning musical Anything Goes, and why she's embracing the opportunity to celebrate new parts of her rather remarkable voice. Plus, we talk how Wicked continues to impact her life, learning to own the differences in her vocals thanks to the love and support of Dr. Brian May, singing with Barry Manilow, and what it was like performing for the Queen, plus what we can all expect from her new album. Belting at the ready, it's West End superstar Kerry Ellis, here now on this, the next episode of 11, the official theatre podcast. To ensure the safety of all involved in this episode of 11, Kerry and I connected for this conversation digitally, so please forgive any brief moments while we wait for the internet to catch up. Enjoy. She is the first lady of the West End with the biggest voice basically ever. So please help me welcome to this, the next episode of 11, direct from the Barbican Centre for Anything Goes. Hello, Kerry Ellis. How are you?
Hello. Well, that's a very nice intro. I'm so glad that people can't see me. You can see me. I've got a stocking cap on my head, my big glasses, because I can't see anything. I look like a potato, I think.
You look beautiful, I promise. And it is a podcast, so you're safe. So don't worry about that. Kerry and I have planned to do this for so long, and it's finally happening. I'm so excited. I've got like a bajillion and one questions. And as you said, you are between shows of Anything Goes. So let's start there, because this production of Anything Goes has taken not just Broadway, the US tour, the UK tour, and now back to the Barbican by storm. It's literally huge and it's incredible. And I had the absolute honor of coming to see you in the show last night. 10 out of 10, you absolutely knocked it out of the park. It was like, it felt so right to see you up there playing this part. And I felt like as an audience member, it was seeing something new for you. I'm so used to seeing you in these big belty roles. And what was extraordinary was to really see your dance and your acting shine through. Was it an easy yes for you to take on such an iconic role like Reno Sweeney, or did you sort of approach with caution?
I mean, it was an easy yes, because I was so excited by it. I didn't think I'd get the opportunity to play Reno Sweeney, because, you know, with these roles, especially as I get older, the stars really have to align. You have to be available. The show has to come up and they have to want you, you know. So there's a lot of things that need to be considered. I must admit, I was a little daunted because of the dancing, because I haven't done, I mean, I haven't put a pair of tap shoes or hadn't put a pair of tap shoes on since I left college, which is over 20 years ago. So that was a little daunting. And you, although I've done things like Cats and, you know, a little bit in Oliver maybe and My Fair Lady, but it's just not been for a long time. It's not this kind of classical kind of movement. So I was a little daunted by it, but you know, I kind of love a challenge and I love anything that's going to push me out of my comfort zone. And for me, I always kind of say yes straight away and then think about it later. So it was an easy yes. And I'm so glad that I did, because I'm sure you could see last night, I just love it. I really do. And I've done lots of shows and enjoyed lots of shows, but this has a different thing going on with it. And I don't know what it is. There's just something special about the show and this company, and being at the Barbican is just really wonderful.
New musical theatre is extraordinary, but the classics are a classic for a reason, and they've been around for God knows how many years now because they're just so well written. And I think last night, seeing you really dive into that acting and that dancing, it felt a joy to watch. And I can imagine for you getting to work with this material, it must be a joy to get to perform.
Yeah, and there's a reason I think that these musicals do come back, and they do create an audience. You know, people come and see these musicals time and time again, and it's because they're great. You know, they're great shows. They tell brilliant stories. They're funny. They have fabulous songs. I mean, there's Cole Porter music in this show. It's just hit after hit, and you know every song. You know, like when you go and see a jukebox musical, you know, you love it because you know the music. You know all the music, but it's not like something that you hear on the radio every day, but they're classic songs which everybody sings along to, and you kind of go, oh yeah, I forgot this one was in it. And a friend of mine came to see it, who's a wonderful orchestrator, conductor, and said, you know, I can't believe how many standards are in this show. Mm. And I was exactly the same. When I came to see it, I was like, I've sung a lot of these songs in concerts, but didn't realise they were all in one show. And the comedy is great to play. It feels very fresh, even though it's a real classic kind of old musical. It feels very current and very fresh and almost quite topical, because the world is on upside down and anything does go, because our world is changing dramatically and we do have to move at a fast pace, which this show does. And we do have to kind of move with the times and take people as they come. And I think that's what this show gives people.
One of the things that I loved last night was a lady sat behind me, as you referenced with the songs, that every time the sort of the beginning of a song started and you guys started singing, she sort of went, oh, yeah, like she was sort of acknowledging that she knew them. And I don't know if she's like a musical theatre super fan, but I don't think she was, because she sort of was referencing in the interval how good the music is. And mm-hmm. for you, it's a different sound from you going back to the classics of what you started with. But also it felt really lovely to get to hear that different side of your voice. And I can imagine as a vocalist, like you sort of relish that opportunity.
Oh, I'm loving it. And it's funny because, you know, people come to or hear me sing those big notes, those big songs. And this doesn't really have that. I mean, it does have some cracking numbers. And so, like I say, songs that I would sing in concert or sing in my own show, but it's not like, you know, Defying Gravity. It's not As Long As He Needs Me or I Dreamed a Dream. But I kind of love that there isn't that moment. And so for me, it's a completely different journey. I get to just tell the story and sing and dance and that kind of old school musical thing, which is why I got into shows in the first place. It's what I went to drama school for, was to sing and dance and act. And this show does that. And yeah, it does take me back to kind of where it all started for me, like that, my kind of My Fair Lady era, which is great.
How are you with the dancing? Because it's such a huge part of the show. You are the most extraordinary dancer, and we haven't had the luxury of getting to see you do that for so long. But there's no hiding with this. Like, you have to sort of embrace it, because you can't just go, I'm going to move back, because you're front and center. What is it like? Is it 8 minutes, the end of act one? It's ridiculous.
Yeah. It was the one thing that I was nervous about. And like I said to you, I've done Cats before, but I was, you're not hidden, but you're amongst other people. You're not front center like I am in this show. And I was a little nervous of it. And I must admit, I did, before the show happened, I upped my fitness. I started running more. I started training with a personal trainer just so that I could be fit enough to do it. And now that I am. It's made me fitter. I feel really good. I feel healthy. I feel like I've got loads of energy. And the show has a big part to play in that. I was a little daunted as well, because we have lovely Bonnie Langford in the show. And there's a moment in Blow Gabriel Blow where she's sat down and I'm doing this like number right in front of her, and I have to do this high kick, and I was like, I can't do a high kick in front of Bonnie Langford. And I know Bonnie, and you know, she's the most wonderful human being, but even my own little demons in rehearsals were like, I've got to do this kick in front of Bonnie. And I was terrified, but you know, I got over it, and I love every minute of it. I think Kathleen Marshall has done such a brilliant job of making this show accessible. It really feels like a community of people having fun, doing like routines, but dancing because it's what they would do like in a nightclub if you're on a ship, yeah, great. But if you're out and about, so you're real people. You're not a team of dancers, if that makes any sense. We're all individuals in this, and how we move is individual. And she really encouraged that. She wanted that kind of individuality to come out. So I think I found comfort in that.
One thing that's very obvious coming to see the show again was that, having seen Sutton and Rachel do it previously last year, this is very much your version of it. It feels really like you've sort of taken ownership of that, which I must confess doesn't always happen. It's often that the creatives don't want somebody to find themselves, but to bring themselves, but to replicate the success before. But that in itself must be quite exciting for you as a creative, to get to find out what works for you as opposed to try and do what's happened before.
Yeah, absolutely. And Kathleen was, again, very instrumental in that. She wanted us to all bring our own selves to it and give us the freedom to explore and change and develop and play, which was really great to start with. And for me, I try and treat any show like that, to bring it myself, unbiased performance to it, and tell my story. And because otherwise you're just kind of, I don't know, going through the motions. It's got to work for you, because I think audiences see through that. If you're just doing it and you're going through the motions of somebody else, I think people know. It's got to be truthful. It's got to feel like it's coming from you and it means something.
Definitely. It does feel 100% you, and it's a real joy, and it sort of can come across as a little bit disingenuous to keep saying it, but it was a real pleasure to get to see something so new from you and to really see you embrace it. And also very, very funny. I mean, knowing you, you're very cheeky and very likable, but it's a very, very naughty part, and it feels like the comedy came very naturally to you.
Oh, I do love it. I mean, yeah, I am all of those. Yeah, I'm very cheeky, and I feel very fortunate to do a job that I love. And this show is just joyous, and it's nice to, especially what we've been through in the last couple of years, to bring something that is funny and is light and that is just escapism, pure, wonderful, blissful, unapologetic escapism for a couple of hours is really lovely. And the script is so good. I mean, the text is so good that it plays itself. You don't really have to try too hard because it's written so well. And, you know, to be surrounded by people like Dennis Lawson and Simon Callow, I mean, they're just legends. And the cast that were here last year that have come back, like Sam Edwards and Hayden Oakley, Carly and Nicole, and they're brilliant. You know, they're fabulous. So it's just, we're just playing and having fun and surrounded by brilliantly talented people. And that makes your job really easy when you're playing opposite great people. It just happens. And yeah, it's great. And the audiences react very differently. But we toured, obviously, before we came to the Barbican, and they would react differently in different cities to different parts of the show, which was really interesting, but allowed us to kind of enjoy and explore that. So then when we came back to London, we'd hit every angle, and we were ready to, you know, experience whatever London gave to us.
I have to mention the costumes as well, because I think you do get by far one of the greatest sets of costumes I think I've ever seen on you on a stage. It's slightly embarrassing how good the costumes are, like yourself and Bonnie in particular. Do you just feel as extraordinary as you look?
Oh my God, I feel like I'm at the Oscars and doing those, you know, the costume changes to come out and they present each different, you know, present each award. Yeah, I mean, they are stunning. The show, I remember when I saw the show last summer, you don't even question it. You're just transported to that time, and they are so elegant and effortless, and they move, the materials on them are stunning, and they move so beautifully. And we all have so many each. There's so many wigs, costumes, shoes, tap shoes, obviously. there's so many changes, and I think people love that. They do respond to the beauty of that. It does look just classy and elegant and gorgeous.
Definitely it does, and it's a phenomenal set. It feels like silly just to keep saying how amazing it is, but I think the fact that it won the Oliviers, it of course won the Tonys, it's had all this success, is testament to good work and good material, and I can't wait to come back and get the opportunity to see it again. And I love the fact that the lady behind me was very vocal all the way through. I feel like she should be on this podcast to tell you how extraordinary you were, but it really, really was incredible. And I think the audience reaction just from when I was there is testament to how great you are. And I just love the fact that classic musicals are getting their time again, and that's no disrespect to the new stuff. I love it as much as the next person, but you know, it's nothing like a modern version of the old school stuff to remind us all why, particularly post-COVID, why this industry is so important.
Oh yeah, and to see people react to something like this, I mean, you know, I've done a lot of big numbered shows, you know, where they've got the big finish and it, you know, it's raucous and it's high notes and, you know, it's all singing and dancing, which makes people stand on their feet. This is really interesting for me because it's not that, you know, and but people jump on their feet at the end of the show, and it blows my mind because they're reacting to all of those lovely things, the costumes, the sound, the lights, the music, the comedy, the people. And that's great. And that it's just simple musical theatre based, you know, going old school, but it works.
Through fear of contradiction of everything that I've just said about the show, for any of your amazing followers and fans that, of course, are going to come see the show, we do still also get the signature Kerry Ellis belting all the way through it as well. It's still in there, which you're like, oh, comfort zone, it's back.
I mean, I do have a couple of little belty numbers in there. Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I mean, the songs are iconic. You know, Blow Gabriel Blow, You're the Top, I Get a Kick Out of You. Again, Standard I've done endless times. And obviously Anything Goes. And that's it's a really important song in the show. And I do get to do a nice little belty number at the end. So yeah, it does scratch that itch. And for anybody that's come in, they will get it. They will get what they want.
I don't know how sort of aware you are of your body language, but at the very end of Act One, when you're facing the back, ready for the song, the note even that everybody knows is coming, you did this sort of head back moment last night that really made me laugh, which was thinking, and place, and off we go. And it was like, there she goes.
Have a breath. Take a breath. You know what though? I mean, I kind of have that with every show that I'm in. I know there's always that moment that people are waiting for. Like in Wicked, it was the end of Defying Gravity. They're waiting for you to go, ah. In Cats, they're waiting for you to go, touch me. And you know, Oliver, as long as he needs me. And there's always that moment. And this has exactly the same thing. People are waiting for you to go, anything goes. It's amazing. I get it. You know, it's what makes a brilliant song kind of have that ending to it. But yeah, I guess I've kind of learned how to get through those moments and just take a breath and go for it.
I think it's very safe to say that audiences do love it in all of the different shows that you reference. I mean, I've been to many of your shows where people just scream all the way through it. You're like, oh my God. But one thing that's become synonymous to you, of course, is the remarkable talent of your voice. And you reference being an Oliver. I remember coming to see the show. And what you did, which I think is the genius of your talent, is that you take these signature songs and numbers and make them your own. And we were sort of saying that so often that isn't always the case. Is that always an easy thing to be able to do vocally, to not copy what's come before? Or do you think that's just something that for you as a creative comes naturally? Because redefining As Long As He Needs Me full out, some people won't like it, but a lot of people will. It's a difficult game, right?
Yeah, and I think a lot of it has to do with the creatives. Like, I think you have to be given that freedom to do that. I think I was never really a typically traditional musical theatre singer. I kind of had that rasp and I had that rock element to me very early on, even in the My Fair Lady days before I, you know, worked with Brian. There was always that element. So I think for me, it's how I interpret a song. I don't really question it too much. But being allowed to do that with a musical director's blessing, and the same in this, you know, Steve Ridley, who's our musical supervisor, was so brilliant. And he was just like, you do you, and then I will kind of rein it in, or I'll push you in a direct if need be, but you do you. And for me, having that freedom is blissful. It's really difficult when you're being tied into a specific structure, which you need to be in a sense in musicals, because we all have to tell the same story. But for me, having freedom is bliss. And it also changes it up for me, and it keeps it fresh for me, because I like to change it up slightly vocally. I like it because it eggs the cast on. It gets the cast moving, and I like that it makes it feel fresh for me. And then that works on the audience then. So as long as it's within keeping of the show and it has reason for being there, then I think it's all game. It's all fair game.
Talk to me about how you came to the relationship with your voice, because I can imagine early on when you realised that you could sing, you obviously tried, as I think we all do, fit in line with everybody else, but noticed the difference in your voice. But then was it Brian and We Will Rock You that really sort of, I don't want to say gave you permission, but allowed you to explore the fact that you had this other part of your voice that was different, but the difference is the good part?
Yeah, well, I think, I mean, my dad was a rocker. So I grew up listening. He loved like Meat Loaf, and he loved things like the Beatles and Queen, obviously. And he was a proper rocker. So it was in our house, like rock music was in our house. So I think without really knowing it, it was being fed to me. And I also obviously went to dance school and like a local dance school. So I was doing that kind of classic, you know, MT kind of thing. So I think they just merged as what I was hearing. Like, you know, you're a product of your environment, and it was what I was singing along to. So in my bedroom, I would sing along to Bonnie Tyler, Holding Out for a Hero, and I would also sing along to Meat Loaf and do his big numbers and sing the duet parts and sing his. But then I'd sing along to Magic of the Musicals and sing all of the musicals. So I always had these two kind of contrasting sounds. I think obviously when I met Brian, he obviously saw that in me and was kind of bringing it out and encouraging me to explore it and to find where that was going to take me. And that, again, it came at the right time because I'd done a classical show, My Fair Lady, and used that part of my voice, which was more traditional. But then obviously, you know, got Rock You and we were away. And he was just constantly bringing that out of me and give it. And he was the first one to kind of give me permission to sing like that in a show. Be like, you know, be you, do you, because that's what's great. He's been also quite influential throughout my whole career, really. And when I have been doing musicals, he always does encourage me to go to be myself and to express myself as a performer.
Do you reference, or are you aware of the impact that those decisions have made on other people? Because people use your voice, seeing you in shows, particularly if we reference the We Will Rock You soundtrack, on how your voice is noticeably different and fantastic, and therefore they are influenced by that. So it sort of has a knock-on effect of allowing other people in similar situations to be themselves. I don't want to put too much pressure on you, but like that's kind of cool, right?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, not so much, but occasionally when if I go and do like workshops with younger students or whatever, and they'll sing something like No One But You, or and they'll do like the little kind of riffs that I would do, and that, so kind of and if, you know, youngsters say, oh, I want to sing like you, or, you know, that's always nice. If I go and teach or I go and do workshops, I say to them straight away, look, I'm one of you. I'm not a teacher. I'm not going to teach you how to do something, but I'm going to share my experiences with you. Now, I'm not a director. I'm not a musical supervisor. I'm not any of those things. I'm still on the other side. So I still feel very much one of the worker bees.
I love the fact that you can go to work, but it can have an influence. And I sort of think sometimes doing a lot of these conversations, we sort of shines a light on the fact that our industry does change people's lives, if that's through the stories we're telling or the way in which people are interpreting stuff. And I like the fact that it reminds us all the power of theatre. It's the other side of it, isn't it?
Hugely. And what's interesting for me now as well, because I have kids and I have this whole other world of being a mum and going on the school run and, you know, with all the other parents, those kind of parents have started to come to see this show and to bring their kids. And that's been really interesting because it feels like we're opening up a world to some people that haven't perhaps seen a musical before. I had some friends in, some my mum friends, a couple of nights ago, and I showed their kids around backstage. And they got on the stage and they were just like, you could see their minds were being blown, and they were dancing and they were picking up the props and they were... And it was like going into, you know, Harry Potter world for them. It was something so new. And it, as a parent, your heart just kind of melts because you realise how important that could be. You know, one of those kids could then go on and do it because of that moment. And that's really special.
Have you reached the stage with your boys yet where you're the cool performing mum, or they're like, mum, stop singing?
No, I've never been cool to them. I don't think I ever will be. And the funny thing is they've been... you know, they've done some amazing things that they have no idea. Like, they've traveled the world when they were babies. I took them everywhere, and obviously they were in Caricots. They don't even remember it. They've been in a lot of theatres. They've been around lots of, you know, cool people, rock stars, and flown on private jets, and they've done all these crazy things, and they have no clue. But no, I'm so not cool for them. I'm not sure I ever will be.
I think that's the best relationship to have with a parent and child. I feel like if your kids think you're cool, that's almost weird, isn't it?
Yeah, although I'm sure David Beckham's kids think he's cool.
Yeah.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Was it strange for you when you went back to watch that? Was it the 10th anniversary performance of Wicked, where, of course, Brian's lovely wife was in the show? Was that one of those moments where we talk about, like, your kids having these amazing opportunities, but for you to go back knowing that obviously you were in that show before them and Brian and everything, was that one of those moments of, like, where life is slightly looking back at itself? Was it like a 360 moment?
It's always weird when you go and see a show that's been such a big part of your life. It's an odd thing, because it's like they're like your babies, you know. They're so close to you. Those characters are so close to you that you have to be so removed to go back and watch it. It almost helped to see Anita, because it made my focus on something else. I mean, I have been back to see it since I was in it, but it's hard not to watch it come back to you and bring back all those memories and feelings. So I did have a focus, which was lovely. And she's brilliant. I mean, I just adore her. There was talk of her doing this, actually, at one point, and that would have been great fun to ask to do something together. But yeah, it's a weird one to be removed. I almost don't want to go back and watch something that I've been in, because I can't help think all the backstage traffic and all the things that I felt and thought at that time. So it's hard.
Especially something that's so life-changing, like that show in particular. Yeah. And obviously We Will Rock You as well, where it gave you such a huge opportunity and platform, took you all over the world as well. Like, you sort of talk about gifts coming into your life. I can imagine Wicked really is that show that will forever keep on giving to you.
Yeah, and also what it gives to other people. Like, now Sam, who plays Billy, says to me, you know, I came to see you when I was just leaving college, and he said, I just remember it so vividly. And my personal trainer last night said, I came to see you 5 times, and we didn't know each other then. She said it just meant so much to me. It's what it means to other people as well. I think that really blows my mind, of how that show kind of puts a real mark on people, and they really take it with them. And that's crazy. That's mental.
When you're at the center of some of those iconic roles, very many of the ones that you've done are huge classics, like big musical theatre staple dream roles. When you're part of those and at the center of it, do you know that they're special at the time, or does sort of time allow you to realize just how extraordinary that moment was in your life?
Yeah, I don't think so. I think you know if you're having a nice time and the company are great and all of those things, but I don't think you do. I think it's only when you come out of it that you look back on it and go, I mean, Rock You was a classic for that, because, you know, we knew we were in this big show, but when we were rehearsing in Awful House, as people call it, it's called Orford House in Vauxhall, it's like this really dingy rehearsal room that everybody hates going to, but it's massive, so everybody uses it. You don't have a clue, because there's no audience, there's nothing. We obviously were, you know, Brian and Roger were running around, and Ben Elton, and that was like you and Arlene Phillips. You kind of go, this has to be great, but you don't know. You have no idea, because you've got no reaction, you've got no costumes, no lights, no nothing. And especially with Rock You, then once we had opened and we got the reviews weren't great, and which was really strange, because it was sold out, you know, and people were on their feet, and we were getting these amazing reactions, and that was really bizarre. And then you almost pinch yourself when it's a year in and people are still having the same reaction, and it's still full, and it's people are still getting on their feet. But I don't even know if you know then, you know. I think because you're so in it that it's hard to be removed, you know, to be objective. I think it's only when you come out.
Does the same apply when you go into a show that's such a huge classic? For example, when you did Miss Saigon, did you know that it was just so revolutionary and such sort of the pieces that people forever reference as being the greatest ever? Do you know it's special then?
Yeah, well, something like, again, like Les Mis, you know you're going into an iconic, loved, brilliant show. And with that comes a responsibility, because you have to, you know, take on those roles and look after them and make sure that they are told in a certain way and that people still continue to fall in love with them, because it might be your first time doing that show, and then it might be somebody's first time seeing a musical, seeing that show. And that's what you have to remember with every performance, that it could be somebody's first time and you're telling them that story for the first time. And that's really important.
My last couple of questions, because you've been incredibly kind with your time. I'd love to talk to you about my favourite album in my musical theatre playlist, and that is the Chess playlist on there. The fact that there's an album, the fact that there's like, you can watch the entire thing, feels like an embarrassment of riches. But for you, like, possibly one of the favourite things you've ever done?
Oh, I loved it so much. And again, I didn't really realise the gravitas of it at the time, because for me, it was like a concert that we were going to do in a couple of days that was filmed, that had a soundtrack. You didn't think about it. All that was going through my mind was, I need to get on, I need to be in the right place, I need to not mess up Josh Groban, I need to sing I Know Him So Well with Idina Menzel. You know, it was just a case of like not mucking it up. So again, I look back on that now and go, that was a real moment in time and affected a lot of people. And I'm grateful. That's why I'm really grateful to Hugh Aldridge, because he's given me a lot of opportunities along the way. And he's, for that alone, the fact that, you know, he championed me to do that song. And I'm grateful, because it made a real mark. And I love it. I think it's great. I'm so young and thin and gorgeous, and I'm like, oh my God, that was a moment in time. So yeah, no, it's lovely.
You're still all of those things, don't worry, I promise. Obviously bold now, but you know.
Yeah, I got no hair.
The industry's been hard on her.
Yeah, it's taken its toll.
Also, I love the fact that they've added into the show, like, the reactions of the audience when you and Idina do that duet. It's almost like a reflection of the real time, because when it was announced, I mean, people were like, oh my God, they're actually doing something together at the same time. It was like, I think when, was it Donna Summer and Babs did their duet for the first time? It was like, oh my God, it's actually happening.
Can you imagine if we did it now? I mean, that would be mental, wouldn't it?
No, you'd kill off every gay person in London. Please don't do that. The other thing that I want to talk to you about very quickly is your music, because I came to see you at, we just referenced the Albert Hall. I came to see you at that Albert Hall concert. I mean, also, I love the fact that you had Brian May basically as your warm-up. Like, in what world does that happen?
I know. I mean, and also when, like, with your debut album, who does their album launch at the Albert Hall? I mean, who does that? Yeah, again, that was a mental moment in time. And I'm like, how did that happen? How did that happen? And it was crazy. Again, Hugh was very, Hugh Aldridge was very influential in that whole process. And I mean, mental, it was, I mean, I guess sometimes you just got to go big. You got to aim big and the rest will follow. But yeah, I mean, that really kicked off my music for me. And that was important to me because I love doing it so much. And I've done it always alongside the theatre. They go in waves, you know, sometimes theatre is dominant and then sometimes my music is dominant, depending on what's happening. And I love it. And I think it keeps me challenged, spontaneous, gives me new options. I mean, I've got an album coming out end of September, I think, which is full of new music, which I'm so excited about, because it's a completely different kind of sound. It's very contemporary. It's very kind of country rock. And I'm so excited for people to hear it. But we're going to do, I think, a cool little venue in North London to launch it. And yeah, music is massive. It's a massive part of what I do, who I am. And I'm very fortunate that I get to do both. I get to do all these different things. And that's important for me. I like the variety. I like the challenge. I like that no 2 days is the same.
And I love the fact that with your music, it's never predictable. You have the classics in there, the staples that we want, but it's always interesting to see what you and what direction you decide to go down and what you decide to do. And I can imagine, like, as a fan, you're like, oh wow, okay, cool, this is interesting. Yeah. But as a creative, that also keeps it fresh, and that's sort of the name of the game, right?
Yeah, well, I think I decided a long time ago that when I came out with the first album, and Brian and I took a long time to navigate what that was going to be. You know, we had a label and we had we had a long time to get it right, and we had different influences, and that was probably the album that people not expected but wanted from me. They wanted all those big songs and all those kind of big notes and orchestrations and rock guitars and blah, which was great. Moving on from that, I mean, you have to make the music that you want to make, because you're not, it's, you don't do it to sell millions of records, because nowadays you just don't sell, unless you're Beyonce or Ed Sheeran or you know, Adele. You don't, you're not going to make loads of money. So for me, it's about doing the music that I want to do, and there's no restrictions with that, and I love that. You know, with musical theatre, there's parameters that you have to work within, but with your music, it's totally up to me what I do, which I love. So therefore, I just have to make the music that I want to make, and then I put it out, and if people like it, great, and if they don't, that's okay, because I've done what I want to do, and that's really, that's very important.
Also, hasn't your music world opened you up to performing with, like, didn't you perform with Barry Manilow, or did I make that up?
I did.
I mean, what the hell?
Days. I mean, how does that, I don't even know how that happened. I got a call from Anthony Cherry, who used to run the Friday Night's Music Night at Radio 2, and he used to be very high up, and he said, doing the Olivier's, I'm putting the plan together, and I want you to come and sing a duet. I was like, great, yeah, you know, love to. I'd done lots of stuff from before. I'd done loads of, like, Friday Night Music Night and Radio 2 performances. And he said, yeah, I want you to sing with Barry Manilow. I was like, what? I was like, you know, I say to young people all the time, you know, your life can change in a phone call in a day. It really does change dramatically. And that was one of those phone calls, you know, I'm blissfully unaware, and then I get a call saying, can you come and sing with Barry Manilow? And I did, and it was mental, and he was wonderful. And yeah, those things happen.
And the Queen's Jubilee concert, I can imagine, also another monumental moment in your life.
Yeah. But again, I didn't quite realise how big that was at the time. And I think because I was just young and blissfully ignorant and just went along. I was like, yeah, we're going to do the Jubilee. Great, amazing. We'll go with all of my Rocky mates, and we'll go and, you know, make a noise in her garden. Brilliant. But now I look back on it and I realise how big that was. That was a massive moment.
I don't want to say it's one of my favourite things you've done, because there's lots of different favourite things you've done. Obviously, your Loose Women performance is my favourite.
How long ago was that, though? That was so long.
It was so funny, just randomly you were popping up on Loose Women. I was like, yeah, because this makes complete sense.
So random.
So you promised me before the end of the year, there's definitely going to be a new album, right? I'm going to hold you to that.
Oh, it's done. I mean, it's done.
Okay.
It's done. We're doing the artwork at the moment. The music is done. It's got to be mastered, but it's all mixed. And yeah, it's end of September. I'm just so excited about it, because it's the music that I like listening to. So that's what's making me excited at the moment.
Okay, good. That's the answer I wanted, because people give me these wishy-washy answers of, like, maybe. I'm like, no, I need something for the fit.
Oh, no, so, it's done. It's coming.
Okay, big tick. This entire conversation was worth it now. I got what I wanted. Okay, you've been very kind with your time. So I've got one very final quick question for you before you go back into the wonderful world of Anything Goes at the Barbican. And that is, I think one thing that's incredibly endearing about you as a performer, we've spoken about all the very varying different shows, vocals, dancing, acting, singing, is variety, being in the West End, touring the UK, doing roles that perhaps we might not have expected from you. And it feels like variety has been one of the strongest things that's kept you going. For the future, is that what you're going to lead with? Is challenging Kerry Ellis as the human rather than just the performer? Is that how you're going to lead the next few years of your career?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. It's all about challenging myself. I don't like sitting still for too long. I don't like getting comfortable. And I come alive when I'm under pressure and when I'm being challenged. If I find something too straightforward, it's just dull for me. So anything that challenges me, that puts me in a new direction, or that, you know, frightens me a little bit, I'm all over it. So yeah, and I think it's important. I think you have to push yourself in new direction, you know, to challenge yourself. It's, I know I repeat myself, but I think that's key, because otherwise we just sit back, and I think there's nothing like that kind of adrenaline, that fear, that excitement that you feel when you're trying something new, or when you're, you know, you get a new script, or you get a new song, or a new challenge comes your way. And I chase that feeling.
Kerry, this has been such a pleasure. We've been trying to do it, as I said at the start, for so long. So I'm so glad that we got such a huge window to be able to do it. So thank you so much. And also, I wanted to point out very quickly that We've known each other now for 15 years. I cannot believe it. I know. Stop, we're only 25.
Oh my God. Stop it. Wowzers. Has it really been that long? Yeah. You did send me a brilliant picture though, a couple of days ago. I've not seen the buses yet of Anything Goes picture on the buses. And I'm so glad you sent me that picture because that was wonderful. 15 years though. Oh my God. That's blown my mind. I know. You're not old enough.
Bless you. That's exactly the answer I wanted you to say. Thank you. Kerry, thank you so much. Best of luck with the album. I'm unbelievably excited with that. And I'm going to nudge you every single day to be able to hear it. But thank you so much. And most importantly, good luck with Anything Goes. You're extraordinary. And thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much.
You've been listening to 11, the official theatre podcast. Find out more about 11 at 11podcast.com or via the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org. Because only together we rise.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.